Hey, Tara.
Hey.
And hey, everybody else. Welcome to Unpacked, a special series called Shoulder to Shoulder, brought to you by Kevin Castanero and Joelle Forte on inclusion and belonging in the context of the church.
Right?
Oh, boy. We have some incredible conversations in store for people.
Yeah.
What I loved about this whole series was, in true fashion, it was about story. It was about listening to people's stories, about how they engaged, not only within the context of the church, but outside of the church. How did they come to understand kind of a more truer version of themselves? And then how did they communicate that? True unpacked fashion, story, story, story.
All about story and some messiness in there too.
Yeah, it was. And you know what? Even we caught ourselves telling our stories.
Yeah, we did.
You know, which was kind of fun and exciting, honestly.
Yeah, and we had a guest host with us.
We did. Yeah, you know what? So often conversations about inclusion, about the marginalized or whatever within the context of institutions in particular, often happen without those folks present.
Yeah, we talk about them at arm's length.
That was something we were not interested in doing in this series. So we brought in a host. You know, both of us are you know, we're pretty straight.
Yep.
So we brought in somebody who is a close friend, a trusted friend from the LGBTQ plus community to be a part of all of the conversations we had.
Yeah, and we had a lot of good conversations.
We did. And so Kevin joined us, and boy, did he bring a unique perspective. You know what I have found? That when organizations start to think more inclusively, what they discover is that the broad spectrum of people expands their understanding of, well, God's love, but also the capacity that their community has to love others.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean you have to agree with everything.
Exactly. And you know what? This isn't really our point. You know, we're really not actually out to attack the church here or any organization for that matter. But we really are intending to challenge people to think differently about how they see themselves and how they see people outside. And so we brought in a whole host of different kinds of people, didn't we?
Yeah, it's such a range. And it's really about getting curious about different topics, like with ex-pastors and people who are trying to like work together with the church and create more inclusive environments.
Yeah, and some actual pastors.
Right.
Still pastoring pastors.
And then all these people from the LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah, and oh man, honestly, that was my favorite part.
Me too.
Was hearing people's stories. And we even took this series on the road and went to Lethbridge to hear some students kind of talk about their own story. My own child's in it.
Mm-hmm.
I love that, Erica. It was a real gift to the conversation as well. So, hey, I hope that whether this changes your mind or actually just challenges you to think differently about your faith, about your perspective on the world, and even towards the LGBTQ plus community, I hope that this is opening up your mind. Hey, we're glad that you decided to join us every Tuesday for the next many Tuesdays in a row. Unpacked is going to be bringing you Shoulder to Shoulder. So enjoy. Oh, Tara.
Yeah.
This journey has brought some new friends.
I know, right?
Into our lives. And that's been one of the best parts for us. Personally, right? So we get to meet these great people today. Brian Nitzel, Making Things Right.
Mm-hmm.
He did a whole podcast series. It was sent to me by somebody from our church and said, oh, you got to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to it, and it was so pivotal for me.
It's an incredible series. It's still there. It's called Making Things Right.
Yeah. So jump over there. It's only like 7 or 8 episodes or something like that. And it is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
This is a gay man, grew up in the church and wants to stay in the church. And has kind of even started an organization called Making Things Right Organization, where he's trying to help churches and organizations to become more open and inclusive and even understand the complexity around the conversation. And what I loved mostly about him was this is a person who's, people get hurt in these conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you start talking about these things, people's passion for being right on one side or the other, they can cause us to not think clearly about how we talk. That can cause harm for the marginalized in the middle.
Right.
And he's put himself in the middle.
Yeah. And really full of resources of helping people navigate that, to learn and to grow.
Yeah. And organizations to learn and to grow and willing to get hurt in the middle of that. So I have a great deal of respect for him. And this episode will not disappoint. Brian is just an incredible guy. And he talks about the middle. So I hope you enjoy this episode with Brian Nitzel. Hi, Brian.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
It's good. It's going good. I'm excited about today's guest.
Me too.
Kind of a new friend. I hope a long time friend. Mostly because Brian has done a podcast series called Making Things Right already. And it was a podcast series that I listened to like when it very first came out. I didn't realize it was brand new coming out. And it just helped me to frame so many conversations around the tension present in the church. Mm-hmm. So, Brian Nitzel, Making Things Right. We're glad that you've decided to join us today.
So good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And I'm excited about today's conversation, mostly because I can see, you know, sometimes you just get a sense about somebody and the work that they do and the posture that they have, the way they approach lots of things in life. And then you're attracted to them. You're just drawn towards them and the message that they bring. And I definitely feel that way towards some of the stuff that you've already put out into the universe in terms of helping the church and helping folks of the LGBTQ community to have a deeper sense of honestly, of God's love for them.
I love that. I love that it resonates, and I love that you trust me. Gosh, you didn't vet me that hard, but I promise I won't say anything too offensive.
Hey, Brian, can you tell us a little bit about you and a little about your story? Kind of where are you in the universe right now? And just a little bit of your story.
Sure. Yeah, I am a normal human being. I live in Atlanta. I've lived here for 9 years now, which is crazy because I grew up in the Midwest and I always vowed I'd never move for a job, and then I moved for a job. but you know, that's just a great story. And you know how a lot of times we stay in places because they're comfortable and they're safe. And once I realized that I was not moving out of fear, a lot of doors opened. So it's been a really good move, but definitely out of my comfort zone. I mean, the South is just, not to offend any Southern listeners here, like I love the South, but it's just a whole different culture. You know, the Midwest is just so, I don't know, just different. So getting used to new cultures, but home is where your heart is. And I found a great church and great friends. And so Atlanta's my home. And what else? I have a day job. I don't, you know, making things right doesn't pay the bills. So that's more of a passion project, which I can talk about that in a little bit. But my day job, I'm just an executive coach. I work with business owners. You know, first part of my professional career was owning a business. And then I, you know, decided that I wanted to help others with, you know, businesses rather than building my own more. And that's been really satisfying. And I just kind of learned, and you know how sometimes you get in the second half of your life and you figure out more what you probably should have done in the first half, you know, and I'm more of a coach than an entrepreneur. And so that's what I do for my day job. And it actually is quite similar to kind of what I do with Making Things Right.
Yeah. Any other details? You have like a partner?
Family?
I am married to a dude. So there you go, listener. Just stop listening now. No, I'm just kidding. He's wonderful. It's the best thing that ever happened to me. And quite surprising to me, because as I'll share a little of my story, if you want to know, like I didn't come out. I didn't find peace between my faith, my Christian faith and my sexuality for quite a while in my adult life. And even when I got peace with that, I never imagined getting married. You know, like it just felt so out of, I didn't even think like God wouldn't be okay with that per se. It was just so out of the realm of whatever. And so it was just such a wonderful surprise and provision to be married. So it's only been like a little over a year. So it's a whole new deal.
Awesome. Wow. Awesome.
And I inherited two amazing stepdaughters, 14 and 16 years old. I'm sure a lot of moms out there are going, oh, I'm so sorry. But they're so great. Like they're amazing kids. I love them. They're a lot of fun.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Tell us a little bit about what was life growing up for you? You kind of just alluded to it a little bit, but what was that like for you growing up?
Youngest of three boys, mama's boy for sure. and grew up in the Midwest, of course, grew up in the church. And interestingly, like, church was a real safe haven for me, you know, like, which we can talk about that too. But as you know, a lot of you and, you know, your listeners probably know, like, the, you know, the story of the LGBTQ folks in the church is not a great story in history, generally speaking, right? Mine was, church was like a safe haven. You know, the school was where it was tough, you know, the schoolyards and not fitting in and not feeling like one of the guys. And, but church for me was a real safe haven, you know, really, I learned really early on what it meant to have a relationship with God versus religion, you know, and understood what that meant. And it just felt really meaningful. And I didn't feel like I had to try to be somebody that I wasn't, you know? And so it's an interesting part of my experience. A lot of my LGBTQ plus friends, the story is quite different. I'm the exception. But I'm glad that I got to get a taste of, I think, what the church should be and feel like, you know? So that was a big part of my growing up, for sure, that impacted me.
Okay. So as you continue to kind of grow in your understanding of, like you said, like your faith, your sexuality, some of those kinds of things, and finding a safe space in the context of the church, what, do you think that that was that about the leadership of that church? Was that about the concept? Was this an inclusive church? You know, like, you know, that's a little bit of kind of what we're talking about and some of what you do now. And what was it? What was it about that space?
I'd say the chapter as a kid was more just about feeling safe. I didn't call it gay, you know, I wasn't brave enough to, I mean, other people called it gay before I did, you know, how that goes. I'm like, what's that? You know, like, so that was, but I think the irrespective of sort of like the sexuality piece, I felt like what I experienced in the church about just an unconditional piece. Like, I didn't have to fit in. I didn't have to be like all the other boys. I didn't have to fit the stereotype. You love music? Great. That's God's gift. You know, here's some opportunities to express that gift. I just felt like it was, and I certainly wouldn't say, I mean, that was a long time ago. So they probably didn't call them inclusive or affirming or non-affirming back then. We didn't have that language, right? And it was definitely a conservative environment. I didn't feel like I could talk about, you know, that I might be more attracted to boys than girls, you know, when that started hitting in. It was really more about just that I just felt like a safe place to just be who I was and got a taste of the church. I think when I moved to other chapters of my life, like, you know, maybe after college, and I continued to go to church, and I was in a church environment where I had started, you know, where I could voice expressing my not being sure about my sexuality and my faith, you know? And for me, that was, you know, I mean, I didn't really reconcile my faith and my sexuality and think that it was okay to like guys and love Jesus at the same time until I was almost 40 years old. But up to that point, I was still in church. I was deep in church. And I was in spaces where I could just be honest about, I don't have this figured out. I'm attracted to guys. I don't feel like, you know, at the time I felt like the best way to honor God was to not act on that. And that felt right to me. And I wasn't afraid of going to hell. I don't think it was out of fidelity for my relationship with God, you know, it was the best of what I knew, you know, but I was in the space where they were like, okay, you know, like they thought that, you know, it was okay for me to like express that I didn't have that figured out and didn't have to pretend that I wasn't, that I was attracted to girls, or, you know what I mean? Like it was a safe environment to have questions and not have stuff figured out. That church, I still wouldn't call affirming, or even, I definitely would maybe call it inclusive, because I was included. I didn't have to have it all figured out.
Yeah. Interesting. It's funny. You just, you know, and you're talking, it's an interesting thing, because I think for me, I often will find myself using language like they're still trying to figure out their sexuality. Right. Like, you know, they're working through some sexual identity things, right? Like, and trying to state it like that, when really, I think there have been moments, it's like a softer way of not actually saying the truth. And I think that's one of those interesting things is like, as a pastor, it was easier for me to say, well, they're still working through some things around their sexual identity. When really, actually, they'd already worked through their things about their sexual identity. It was just like a way of softening the blow somehow for those who, you know, one of the things that I think I've always been trying to do my best as a pastor is to, in the most loving way, state the truth. Just name the thing. So that we can look at it truthfully. And even on the podcast, it's one of the things we talk about. It's like, how do we mine for the truth? And when we find it, how do we carefully communicate? Well, this is the truth of what this is like. And one of the interesting things, Brian, for us is that in our context, Kevin ultimately kind of came to faith through a whole series of different events that took place. One of them was losing his partner, and I ended up doing the funeral. This is the quickest version I can. I just ended up doing the funeral. It was kind of when I met Kevin, basically. And we started a friendship and started to talk a whole lot more about Jesus, to be honest with you, than we did about sexuality. And I think that our church and most of those who didn't know what to say about that were comfortable about it with it. Maybe until you found a new partner. Would that be fair, Kevin?
Yeah. And in all honesty, trying to figure out who you are and finally accepting that, the second phase is figuring out where you fit in and where mm-hmm. people are going to accept you to be who you are, basically. And that comfort zone in being in that place, whether it's the church or with your family or with your friends. So mm-hmm. for me, the first step was accepting who I was and then seeking out where that was going to be accepted in my environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how did that go for like so the people that knew you, family and closest friends, did they come along with you or was it have to be a reboot or somewhere in between?
No, they came along with me. And as Evan explained, I think, you know, finding my faith was really about a tragedy that occurred, which was, you know, the death of Claude. I was looking for something, obviously. I was looking for comfort. I was looking for, you know, trying to make sense of it all. And I think God was looking for me at the same time. And that connection just kind of happened at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. We find God out of need. And that's my story too. Like people came along with me too. Like, so as I said, like I didn't figure out that, you know, it was, you know, I didn't come to a realization that I could be at peace with being gay and loving Jesus until around 40 years old, right? And so when I figured that out with God, then I'm like, oh, geez, now I have to go like tell my parents and I have to go tell my friends, you know, because they've known this different story along the way, you know, like for most of my 20s and 30s, I was celibate. I was quote unquote, I wasn't ex-gay. I hated that term. Like who wants to be ex anything, right? But you know, that worked for a couple of years for therapy. And then I got out of that and I just like, I'm me, I'm not ex anything. But I was a little more asexual or whatever, who knows what bucket I fit into. But everybody knew that story, which was a little more kind of what Evan was, you were speaking to, right? It was a little more of the palatable story. It's like, oh, same sex attraction, but he doesn't have a partner. He's not like gay, you know, like they could handle that narrative in the conservative church environment I was in. But then when I was at peace with God, I'm like, oh, I have to have integrity with everybody else, you know? And much to my surprise, I mean, there were a handful of folks, of course, that were like the extremes, right? A couple that were like, you know what? Call me when you get over your sin, brother. See you later, right? There were a few of those, right? And there were a few of them that were like, hallelujah, we always knew. When can I come to your wedding? Most everybody, the vast majority were somewhere in the middle that weren't sure, but they're like, but they saw my life. You know, they saw my story, they saw my integrity, they saw my love for Jesus. And they said, okay, well, if you're okay with this, then let's figure this out together. And I was just so pleasantly surprised by how many people, and they may not have radically changed their theology, but they definitely respected the sacred conclusions that I came to. And it helped help them think that, oh, maybe it's not my job to decide that for Brian.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that.
Why the shift when you were 40? How did you come to the place of peace?
Yeah. Well, there were, I always kind of think of my story in three chapters. The first one is like, you know, when my faith and my sexuality weren't reconciled, you know, and I was And it really wasn't that miserable. Like, I had good friends, I had a good job. Like, I actually dated some women, and like, it wasn't so miserable, but it just eventually, kind of mid 30s, a lot of the transition was, I don't know how your life was, but you know, in your 20s, you have friends coming out of your ears and life is great and silly and social. And then everyone starts getting married, you know, and literally that was a big dynamic shift where all my friends, late 20s, early 30s, started getting married, having kids, moving away. And I really felt kind of left behind. And this is true about any of my single friends. Right. So it's kind of like this single crisis of like, wow, I'm kind of losing my family and my community. And so that was a real catalyst for me to start pursuing relationships with women, which was wonderful. I just, you know, could only get to about the 20-yard line, you know, like emotionally, you know, like women are awesome. Like, they're better than men a lot of ways and relationship wise. But I mean, I knew something was missing, you know, and I couldn't with all of me move forward. And then I met a guy when I was 36, I think, and I fell in love, and I wasn't planning on that at all. And it just forced a faith crisis for me. I literally hit this crossroads with God and the proverbial wrestling match with God, which wasn't an overnight occurrence. Like in the Bible, mine was a 2-year wrestling match. Because I really had to go back and unwind all these things that I learned, you know, because I loved God and I didn't want to do anything to jeopardize my relationship, you know, with God. And so that wasn't a quick wrestling match. I had to go back and unwind all these things that I'd learned. And it's like, what was of God and what wasn't? And, you know, I suppose you can sort of put your big boy pants on, big person pants on with God a little better at 36 years old than you could maybe at 19 years old. But I could sit down at the table and just say, okay, you know, I love you. You know, I want to get this right. And it's interesting. Sorry, long answer to your question, but hopefully it's making sense. So, you know, so what was part of that wrestling match, right? Well, I searched the Bible with new urgency. And again, I'm a Christian, so I like the Bible. I don't necessarily think, you know, like it's part of the equation for me, but the Bible is really important, right? And I had to make sense of that. And so where did I go first, right? I go to the 6 or 7 verses that specifically address homosexuality, try to make sense of those. And I'm like, I look at progressive views. Oh, that makes sense. Like traditional views. Oh, that makes sense. Like I couldn't figure it out, right? And I really genuinely felt God in my spirit just say, come on over here. And he brought me back to the book of John, which, if you're not familiar with the Bible, that's one of the 4 gospel story renderings of the life of Jesus. And I've always kind of gravitated towards John because it's just kind of a tender rendering. It's got some tenderness to it. I just love it, you know? And so I started reading the book of John like it was like I'd never read it before, and just watching the story of Jesus and who he hung out with and who he didn't and who he cared for and who ticked him off, like the religious of the day, but always gravitated towards the outcast, and how relationship with God and forgiveness was simple and love was simple. And it just, you know, in that deep time of study, I think is when I finally finished my wrestling match with God. And he just said in the deep of my being, we're good. Quit trying to fix your sexuality, Brian. Quit trying so hard. Like, just trust me, trust us. I got you. And I just really understood deeper than ever that nothing can separate us from the love of God. And that's what changed. It was just, I didn't figure out the 6 or 7 verses about sexuality. I still don't have those figured out. I just know that God has me covered.
I love that. You know, one of the things, so I'm curious about, so while you were doing that journey through John and some of those questions at 36, was that, were you safe to do that in the context of your faith community? Or was that something you mostly did quietly?
Great question. That was a private thing. Rewind the tapes. Who was in the mix? I'm sure I had a couple of trusted confidants, you know, that were neutral, that probably weren't, you know, because I didn't want someone to try to sway me either way. This is really a sacred moment for me. I had to figure this out. I didn't want someone to convince me. So I probably had some trusted folks to walk through it for me, but it really was a very deep, personal, sacred process that eventually I could go to faith communities and either validate or deny. But that turning point was very private.
Yeah.
Was your partner at the time part of that journey? Nope. Or is that something you had to do alone?
No, actually, the guy that I fell in love with that was the catalyst, he actually turned out to be a real jerk. So he wasn't in the mix at all. But okay. he did force the issue, which was a beautiful thing, right? Like, it really forced me to look in the mirror and go, okay.
In my coaching business, one of the things that I often will say is that people grow for two reasons. One is that they want to see and experience the world in a new way, or out of a need to survive it. Like, it's one or the other. You're either desperate to survive, or you really are feeling, you know, inspired to learn and see something new. And so I do think that, like, these crossroad moments, right, come to us. And it's like, sometimes it's a need to survive. It's that internal, our deep, deep desire to find that internal peace.
Yeah, we all have those moments.
Everybody.
Once you get there, and you look back and it's like, you know, okay, that's not going to work anymore. You look ahead, like, it's, and you don't know, but you have to make a decision. And that's where faith comes in. Like, I'm not a big believer of God coming down and giving you the answer. I do think sometimes that happens, but faith means we're not sure, right? So when I finally made a decision and felt like I had God's reasonable thumbs up to proceed accordingly, you know, proceed in a different path. When I, you know, my first couple of years of that were very uncertain steps. And I started learning what I think is a more mature perspective on faith. It's not about certainty. It's about trust.
Yeah. You know, and I think you're naming like a universal truth around growth and development and faith growth and development, that it's like, I would definitely would say, you know, 28 years a pastor, I would say the first good 17 years were really about certainty. But no, I'm going to give you the certainty of how God works, how God loves, who God loves, how he loves them, like all of those things. And in some ways, I believed that having the answers to everybody's question was really helping them, you know, solidify their faith. It wasn't until I started to realize that ultimately I was answering questions that nobody was asking anymore. And that really what people were really asking for is, but where is God present in my life? And as you start to really listen to story and you start to really listen to humans, you start realizing actually no one is certain. That is the faith component. And I'm not certain. But I'm giving everybody the impression that I am certain. And it wasn't until I was able to face some of those questions in my own mind that I started to realize that God was so much more interested in my everyday struggles than he was that I had solidified, you know, the five big doctrinal answers, you know, to the questions. Anyways.
No, it's good. Well, and you mentioned a second ago, stories is the catalyst. And it's like, I think it's a little bit of an old, you know, sometimes I think the question you had for me before we even started this is kind of like, what, you know, on this concept of reconciliation between Christian church, LGBT community, why does that matter? What are the hurdles? I was thinking about that, and the hesitations are around not wanting to get things wrong. Right. You know, but that's really built deep in our DNA. It's a big part of, I mean, you ask the younger generation of folks that go to church, I don't think that's in their DNA. But for folks of our vintage and a little bit forward, like, it's really been built into us that the Christian job description at the end of the day is knowing right and wrong and making sure that you and those around you know that. And then love, like, you wouldn't say it that way, but really that's kind of how it plays out. And so, and stories turn that upside down. Stories, and there's even kind of this fear of like, well, I better not meet too many gay folks because they may affect my theology too much. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound sarcastic.
No, we love sarcasm here.
But it's kind of, you realize how silly that sounds when it comes out, right? Because of course humanity should at minimum stress test our theology and our belief system. And if anything, should inform it and transform it. That's why God came as a person. Those are tough concepts to wrap around when it's baked into our Christian DNA, that there are certain things that are off subject, even if stories blow it up, I appreciate that. I mean, heck, that's kind of what kept me in the closet until I was 40 years old. So I understand those, that if you come from a deep faith background, your long held beliefs are really important. They're really important. And I don't think a lot of people who are super duper affirming out there yelling at, you know, conservatives to get on the train is a great marketing strategy, you know, because they have these long held beliefs that are really sacred and they want to get it right, you know, and learning to pivot the Christian duty towards compassion and eventually realizing that that is like the love is an orientation concept, you know, giving people space and time to get there on their own. And it's not at the expense of their conservative beliefs. You know, it just takes time.
Yeah, it is. It is really giving them the time to really look at their tradition and their theology.
And so many churches, like, and it's fascinating, like these, you know, pastors that I talk to, and, you know, and most of them, like, you know, they like talking to me because I'm so under the radar, right? Like they can figure this out kind of in private, but it's like, they kind of come to this conclusion that your belief systems and compassion are not juxtaposed, and you don't even necessarily have to like arrive at affirming theology before you can be nice to LGBTQ plus folks in your church. And I know not everyone would agree with that, but I think that that's important to know that, I mean, I have a friend that buddy, name is Caleb. He's been horribly wounded by the church, like just a horrible story, right? A bona fide, tough story. And there's tons of stories like that, you know, and research to back that up. The LGBTQ plus historically have not had a great experience within faith communities. That you don't have to convince anybody of that. But with Caleb, even as burned as he's been by the church, and he knows my work with making things right and my patience with conservative folks and just inviting them into a more productive conversation, he said, it's not about being affirming. It's about how you love and care for LGBTQ plus people in and outside of your church. That's coming from a gay man who would love every church in America to be quote unquote affirming. But the heart of it is not about a belief system, but about how you love and care for people. And I think conservative beliefs and beautiful care of differing beliefs can coexist.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. Hey, I'm going to backtrack a little bit because you talked about narrative and story. What do you think right now, when we think story, when we think narrative, what is the narrative that most folks in a, and we'll use conservative Christian perspective, we'll use that as terminology here. What do you think the narrative is that they're telling themselves about the LGBTQ community right now?
Great question. It kind of depends if, let's take that conservative side of the spectrum for a second, or traditional maybe is a good word there. So conservative kind of baggage. But more of a traditional biblical perspective on morality and sexuality, et cetera. And it all depends on whether they've kind of stayed in their own individual bubble or not, right? And that's kind of a negative term too, but you know what I'm saying? Like how many, you know, more traditional minded Christians that come to me with, you know, kind of statements that are ignorant. What's a nicer word for ignorant? You know what I'm saying?
That's stupid.
I say, how many gay people do you really know? You know, is kind of my thing. So it kind of depends on their proximity or their allowance of letting kind of stories impact them. But I do think there's just a lot of stereotypes that stories just break really quick. Like number one, there is no such thing as the gay lifestyle. the being the operative word. It's very inaccurate. It's a very disrespectful generalization and stereotype. Most of the gay folks I know lead responsible, moral, productive lives, and a lot of them go to church. So like, if your goal is healing and reconciliation, number one, maybe take that out of your vocabulary. That's not going to win you any, you know, but that's kind of a stereotype again, where I think we hide behind the term gay lifestyle, where it's like, it's really not accurate. It's an extreme representation maybe of that community, but it's not, and it doesn't get us anywhere, you know? And I also think, like, from a conservative perspective, that it's important to know, even if you hold to a traditional perspective of sexuality or gender or marriage, and I can respect that, we have to agree to disagree on things. You still need to be informed by the history of the LGBTQ plus community and the church. Don't put your head in the sand on that one, right? Like, let that inform you. If you're not familiar with the Marin Foundation study, so you spoke to Love as an Orientation. Andrew Marin's the author. His last book was actually my favorite, 2016, Us Versus Us, had a research study. You could see the stats on my website if you want to, but basically 86% of the LGBTQ plus community was raised in the church, right? 54% left at the age of 18. That's compared to 27% of the general US population. So twice as many of the gays, sorry, LGBTQ plus, left church at the age of 18. Peace out. Number one reason, negative personal experiences. Didn't even show up in the top five or something for general US population. And out of that, 76% said they're open to returning to their faith roots. So just knowing that the story and the history of the LGBTQ plus community is hurt and disregard within the Christian church. And then just deciding, what do you want to do about that? Like, don't hide, make sure that's part of the narrative. You can have your traditional beliefs, and that's, I can respect that, but do that in concert with an acknowledgement of the history of a marginalized set of people by the church. And you are part of the church. How do you want to respond to that? I just think that's an important, if I ever try to stretch people a little bit, it's sort of in that respect, like being aware of those stories.
Yeah. How do you acknowledge that harm was and is being caused?
So let's take responsibility for that. Like, you know what I mean? And I think that's where, like, I think conservatives can sign up for that. I think that's why Andrew Marin in that book had such appeal. Because he wasn't asking people to change their traditional belief systems on marriage. He was asking them to change their priorities about what is God really asking us to do here? How do we elevate this conversation to what really matters is kind of the point, and not stay stuck in this debate on moral and sexual ethics where a group of people are getting lost.
Yeah. I think for me, one of the big shifts for me was just, and I recognize this as a pastor who helped people grow spiritually. You're constantly in a state of refiling or restacking your values system.
Mm-hmm. Values.
And that's growth. That's actually what it means. And I think ultimately, like, even, you know, in our story, which we'll share in a different episode with Kevin, that was a big part of what was happening. Mm-hmm. I had to recognize, well, no, what is the deeper value? What's the deeper, in my case, the language I used, what is the deeper theology of the whole narrative?
I love that you say it that way, because this is about, a lot of times people say this isn't about theology, it's about people, but it is about theology. It's like, what part of theology are you talking about?
Yeah, which is more important? In your podcast series, though, you talk a little bit about the context. We're going to shift gears a little bit here to talk about. You give a pretty great image of kind of how does this work? You got people on this side, people on this side. People here. Can you just describe that a little bit?
My concept of the quieter middle.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah. I probably should define that first. It's not as mysterious as it sounds. But if you haven't noticed already, I'm a hopeless optimist, right? So I'm just going to keep believing good stuff until it comes to be, right? So maybe some of this is based in optimism, but I've done a fair, you know, I'm leveraging research and doing a bunch of my own to kind of validate my optimism. But basically, I don't know if it's the 20-80 rule or the 30-70 or whatever, but all these people in the noise in the news, right? The extreme opinions, when it comes to matters of faith, religion, and the LGBTQ plus community, you know, one of the most divisive hot button topics of our day, probably the defining issue for the Christian church, you know, right now, like divorce was 20 years ago. We got to figure this out. Everybody that, you know, you hear on social media or gets the headlines seems to, you know, are extreme positions, right? Polarized. And they're the ones making all the noise in the news. But I am convinced that they are the minority, right? And think about it. The rest of us are somewhere in the middle trying to figure this thing out. You know, we might be a little more progressive. We might be a little more conservative, but we hate the rhetoric. We're not ready to march in a parade, but we're somewhere here in the middle realizing that we got to do this better. Like everything is not so black and white as we thought. That's what I call the quieter middle. They're not in the noise and the news, but they are the majority. They're the most of us. Realizing that there's a lot of gray, whether we like to admit it or not, you know, and there certainly is on this subject. And so that's kind of hopeful to me to know, first of all, I think the majority of us are in the quieter middle figuring this stuff out. So don't let the headlines hijack the conversation. And I told you a little bit about this, but like a lot of my sleuth work with pastors and churches and evangelical churches, like the needle is moving. And the headlines won't tell you that. But the stories tell you that. Have you ever heard of Dr. David Gushee? Super cool, smart guy. And he is more progressive, you know. So if you read Dr. Gushee, he's going to be more progressive and, you know, tell you that you should be full LGBTQ+ inclusion in your church, you know. But I don't think that's his whole agenda. But he came from a very conservative background, Southern Baptist. He was one of the leading Christian ethicists. And then as soon as he came out with his book, Changing Our Minds and Making a Case for LGBTQ+ Inclusion, of course, Lifeway and all the Christian, everyone dropped him, you know. But he's been kind of on his own mission ever since to invite folks kind of in the quieter middle to a better conversation around this stuff. And he kind of says, you know, maybe an ironic result of this increasing polarization, which it really has only gotten more increased, and the research shows you that, is that the rest of us in the middle are like, well, I'm a Christian, like, but if that hate and vitriol is, I don't like that option, you know, maybe I can look over here. And so there's a lot more appetite to realize that the traditional extreme position is not really Christian at all. And most of us see that and know that, and it creates a little more of an openness and a curiosity for maybe not completely changing my views, but there's a better way to do this. So that's sort of the quieter middle thing that I talk about. And I just think don't let the noise and the news and the headlines tell you what the narrative is. I think if you look deeper, there's quite a different narrative.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's hopeful, right? Like just, and maybe it's my optimism, but darn it, I'm going to keep proving it until I die.
Yeah. We did ask you this, and I was wondering if you could explain a little bit more of like why reconciliation between those two groups is important. Like, why does it matter really? I think people will be asking that. I think it matters to be clear, but I think people will be wondering.
I think at the end of the day, it's just important because they are the proverbial outcast, and therefore we have to go after them, right? Like, look at the life of Jesus, and if you're Christian and you model, you know, Christian means Christ-like, you know? And so, and I, you know, one of the things I just love about the picture of Jesus in the book of John or the different narratives we have is he took all these really complicated rules and standards that none of us could live up to or understand even. And he made them really simple, you know, and he spent his time going after those that the religious of his day had on the outside looking in. And he gave them real simple invitations of love and forgiveness and salvation and reconciliation. And the only people he was really pissed at, right, is the people that made them feel on the outside looking in. So fast forward 2000 years into the unresolved hurts of the LGBTQ+ community coming out of the church, we have a decision to make, right? And so I think it's important to reconcile because we're the proverbial offender and they're the proverbial outcast. And that's important to make that right. You know, maybe not everyone become affirming and doing gay marriages, you know, and again, that's a more of a political subject to me. It's like, how are you going to love and care for a community that historically has been hurt and disregarded by faith and family experiences, how are we going to, you know, love and serve those folks? That's why the reconciliation matters. And quite frankly, I think we're not saving the gays. We're saving ourselves. You know, we're saving ourselves about what it means to love. And love was never meant to be complicated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny. I'm glad that you got to that, because one of the questions I was trying to formulate, I was texting a little bit yesterday with Tara trying to formulate this question, because as I was thinking about it, I was like, this was the question I was going to ask. And I think you just answered it. But it's like, what does the church lose or forfeit by not including the LGBTQ community?
Well, other than we're all fabulous.
Obviously.
That was a very stereotypical statement. Sorry. You got to play the stereotype sometimes. You know? But really, we're missing out on that maturing evolution of our faith. To step outside of certainty and to step outside of being the moral police and to step into not just justice, because that sounds so next gen, although I love justice. It's about getting back to the simplicity of being like Jesus. And it's funny, like, isn't it funny how, like, the older we get in our faith, the simpler it should be. Maybe there is something to, like, that childlike faith thing. I don't know. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, how do we get back? That's important for us to learn how to agree, to disagree, and to make sure that we're, I say this a lot, and it's a little bit of a rhetorical statement, I apologize, but I say, what do you want to do at the end of the day? Do you want to defend a position or do you want to defend people? Mm-hmm. It's a rhetorical question. And I think it's the Christian duty to defend people first and foremost.
I think you're absolutely right. And one of my observations is, I kind of want to add to it another layer, that it's like, I think oftentimes, this would be my take on it. I would say that the traditional church, the way I was raised and taught, I'm 48. I'll say 48 now. Still, right? By the time this airs, I might be 49. Okay, I'm still in my 40s. That the church, for the most part in North America, is a head-centered church. It's a head-centered place. It's like, we understand the Bible. We study the Bible. We know the law. We even know sanctification, and we know what, you know, the sacrificial things of Jesus, like all of those things. It's all in our head. It's in our head, right? But my observation is that until it makes its way through our heart, that is, that we come not just to know it, but we come to believe it. And then it turns into action. It turns to our hands, our body, our actual activity of how it is that we love.
Because you can't not act on something that's in both your head and your heart.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right. By rejecting a people group, I think that we forfeit understanding how wide God's arms stretch for his creation.
Absolutely.
So we can put any people group in there. And that gives me the chance to be more Evan.
Because you get outside of you, you're speaking really to such a universal principle, it transcends the church. It's like, why is diversity and inclusion so hard to figure out, right? In corporate America, like, it's the same thing, because this is above my pay grade, what I'm trying to figure out in my brain. But like, it's just, we're just used to not being around other. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all white on this call. I'm not even making a statement. I'm just saying, like, you know what I mean? Like, I look around and I'm like, I can count on one hand how many, non-white friends that I hang out with on a really regular basis. Like, it just sort of speaks to that tension that I just think is good to just lean into a little bit and not accept it as like anything other than, yeah, that is my comfort zone. So how do I get out of that? And how do I see the breadth and the depth of in the church context, God's creation and God's love? And in the midst of them, in the midst of those stories, your theology gets stretched.
Well, yeah, I agree. And what also comes to mind for me is like, I didn't grow up in the church and I'm a little bit younger. So for me, I think also people my age are looking at it like, well, you're telling me Jesus loves everybody. And I've said this to Evan so many times. You're saying Jesus loves everyone except for like the Bible and what I understand about my faith and what God's love is that we love everybody and we care for everybody. And then the church says, except for these groups. And that's really confusing and not attractive and doesn't align with my values. So then I'm like, it creates almost a distance between my relationship with God then, because I don't know what to trust. So as someone who didn't have a traditional background, that was really hard to understand.
Agreed. And that may not be the quieter middle of churches, because I think there's a lot of churches that you know, hear what they have to say and you're like, oh yeah, I want to go to church there. But there are definitely expressions of more of the traditional conservative churches that I think are changing that definitely are like, love everyone except. And you can look around and know that that's exactly what it is, whether they're saying it or not.
Yeah.
And it takes a long time for your head and your heart to connect with believing that you're a child of God.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can say in your head, I am a child of God. When you actually feel it, in my experience, no one was able to take that away. Mm-hmm. But when they do, then I feel like you're putting God in this tiny little box. Mm-hmm. He's so much bigger and you've just put him in this tiny little box. And that's always been a big struggle for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think too, to add to that, you've also put me in a tiny little box. You just compartmentalized everything.
Yeah. Unpack that. What do you mean?
What you're talking about, Kevin, is like what I heard you just say was your heart is broken that somebody would put God in a tiny little box. I would also say that the unnamed thing is that they've also placed you in one and inadvertently not realizing they've placed themselves in one too. And all of a sudden, we start to have this compartmentalized faith community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Brian, you referred to the gospel so many times. And in my mind, the incarnation of Jesus, the incarnation of God in the form of Jesus that comes to earth was really to show the religious community that their box for him was too damn small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yep. I had to unwind some of that stuff because I had a faith crisis, right? I love Jesus and I was gay. So I didn't have the luxury of like staying in my little box of theology. Like I had to unwrap that, right? And that's true for like in the context of this discussion, true about like parents or family members where a kid comes out and it's like, okay, they don't have the luxury of not dealing with this. They're immediately in the front row having to figure this stuff out. But for the rest of us, like, I think it's equally as important, because unless you're willing to sort of go there and to unpack that, you're going to stay and sort of like, forgive me, because I have all these words that I wish I'd find equivalents that didn't sound so negative, but I feel like so many Christians sometimes just kind of stay in diapers. You know, like you punch the card and you say the word and you believe in God and Jesus and all of that. And you hold on for dear life for these truths. And you don't change a thought until the grave. Like that's exaggeration to the point. Right. And that's almost seem like a noble Christian life. Man, it takes bravery to step out of that mindset, to really look at stories of people that get in the way of that. And then you have to decide which way you're going to go.
Yeah.
It probably will always be the age old question. It'll be always be the ultimate invitation for us to grow.
Oh, I want more people to experience it. And it is in the tension. It's in that the main course is in the tensions of our life. It's in the messiness.
Theologies don't match up with the stories. And so what are you going to do with that?
Yeah. How could we see our hearts being broken so that they can be enlarged?
And that is the key. Like you asked me, one of your questions in advance is, what are practical ways to make things right? It's a real simple answer for me. Know our stories, you know, and I know the history, know our stories, because what that does is, and that's the brave step, right? Out of the the diaper stage of being Christian. Sorry if that's offensive to a listener. And I'm not calling you a baby in diapers. I'm just saying I'm inviting you to know our stories, because when you step into that, it informs your theology. It tests your theology. It awakens your heart. You know, that's why do we watch movies? Why do we read books? We love stories. We're looking for ourselves in the story. We love a story. Stories are intended to awaken our humanity and compassion and get us closer to the heart of God. It's not a slippery slope. You know, it's riskier to not go there than it is to go there. If you're super conservative, I say that. It's like, because there's so much at stake here, you know? And so leaning, usually it's the stories is kind of the driver, because then empathy is the key, you know? And I completely respect how long-held beliefs and compassion can seem to collide. And it's not easy to reconcile those two. Kept me in the closet until I was 40 years old. I get it. But like stepping into stories is the right brave step to take and just see where it goes.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well,
it's good.
I think, yeah, as we kind of wrap it up, it's like just recognizing that sympathy is something you have for somebody. Empathy is something you join someone in.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we have empathy to join in with the hurting folks in our cultures?
And it's really easy. Like, just look around, like coffee invitations to a couple LGBTQ+ people in your life and see who will take you up on it. Like, there are really simple ways to, you know, inform your perspectives. And I'm probably preaching to the choir to half your wonderful audience. I'm just saying, like, that's sort of the step, that it really is that simple.
I love it. Hey, can you tell us a little bit about how can people learn more about what you're up to?
And if we missed anything you really want to say,
yeah,
add that.
Good point. Yes.
I don't think so. I mean, I'll think of it later, but I don't know. Yeah. makingthingsright.org, you know, is kind of my landing page, and there's resources there. There's some videos. You can see my story there. I wrote a white paper. If you don't know what the heck a white paper is, I joke it's longer than a blog and shorter than a book. I don't have time to write a book yet. This year is the year of the book, so I'm working on that. But a white paper is basically my thesis, right, of what's the problem statement. And it invites people in to examine the Christian response and responsibility to the LGBTQ+ community. But it's all about stories. It's not about theology. So don't worry. I mean, it's not a heady white paper. It's inviting you into stories and letting those impact you. So you can get that at my website. We did the podcast. We just did a podcast mini series. So we did 8 episodes, but got lots of attention, which is really fun. So if you're a little more of a podcast person, the white paper, the videos, the podcast, it's all kind of the same invitation built on stories.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Absolutely love it.
So good.
Hey, thank you so much for your time. And more importantly, thank you for the work that you are doing. Yeah. To hope, you know, my hope is that it really does expand people's understanding of God's love and the kingdom of God.
And it is. And I'll end with my optimistic note, right? Take a break on the headlines informing you what you think the narrative is. And individuals are getting ahead of this as Christians. And now Christian leaders are really starting to reexamine and pivot when it comes to how to love the LGBTQ+ community. And I'm a believer in that, and I'll just keep trying to help move that needle the best I can.
Love it.
So
absolutely
good.
Love it. Thanks.
Thank you guys. That was fun.
Yeah, that was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, this is awesome.
Nice to meet you, Kevin.
Nice to meet you too, Brian.
All right. Hey, thanks. I know you got to go, Brian, so we'll let you go. And
Day job.
Totally get it. Yeah. I probably have a little day job stuff to do too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us. If this episode or the podcast has been helpful to you in any way, it would mean so much to us if you would take just 30 seconds to do one or all of these 3 things. First, follow or subscribe to the Unpacked podcast. This helps you never miss an episode, and it goes right to your device. And it helps us so more people can find it too. To do this, head to the show page on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Then just look for the follow or the plus sign and click it.
It's so important to us and it would mean so much. And hey, while you're there, if you'd be willing to give us a review, preferably 5-star, and share an episode with a friend that you found helpful, we would be so grateful. We are so, so grateful for this little online community. And if you're looking for more ways to support or exclusive content, you can head to our Patreon account and you can find that in the link in our bio. Again, thanks for listening.